Thank you. They're the first words I wanted to say to you in 2020 because of what happened in December. And so before I start everything, I want to say thank you. Thank you for your generosity, both in serving last year, if you were part of a team that served in this church, served people, served God. And thank you if you were part of giving and of your finances to for this church and for this ministry. And as God called me here to lead this church, I just want to say as leader that thank you. We are in this together, we're doing it together, and we can't do it alone. And so thank you for your generosity. It was late in November, I touched a three-part series on, I'm sure you remember it well, it was a series on our vision and three questions our vision causes us to ask. How will I pray, who will I reach, and what will I give? And then following that final sermon series, what will I give, that final sermon, we went into December, and we had, as a result of your generosity, the best month we've ever had in our church for giving. There was $360,323 given to the church from you that month, of which $40,000 was set aside for our special Christmas offering. And I just think, wow, that was a light, that was a glimpse. Yeah, let's honor God and let's thank one another. Thank you. And I just can't help but think that that's the kind of heart that it takes to accomplish the vision that God's called us to double our impact by 2025. And I'm just amazed and very thankful to you. We'll give you an update on the Christmas offering, the projects that we had. As we go further in the spring, we'll update you in things and when they're completed. But I just wanted to say thank you to you for your generosity, both in your serving, your giving of time, and your money. Thank you very much. Now, growing is a thing we're supposed to do. Most of us are growing this way, but I'm not talking about that today. I'm talking about growing on the inside, growing in our relationship with God. And it starts with this question: what is my purpose? What is my purpose? So there was an individual, his name was Hugh Moorhead, he was 45, in the early 2000s, he picked up, it would have been, well, it wasn't pre-email, but it was, you know, email wasn't a lot then, but he wrote, well-known philosophers and authors and leaders in our world and asked one simple question: what do you think is our purpose in life? I can't tell you all, but here were some of the famous philosophers and leaders of the day back in the early 2000s. Writer Isaac Asimov wrote back to Hugh Moorhead and said, "As far as I can see, there is no purpose to life." And psychiatrist Carl Jung said, "I don't know what the meaning or the purpose of life is, but it looks as if there were something meant by it." It seems like there should be a purpose to it, but I don't really know. Arthur Clarke, who's the author of 2001, wrote back to Moorhead and said, "I'm afraid I have no idea of the purpose of life." Psychiatrist and inventor of the RET therapy, Albert Ellis, wrote, "As far as I can tell, life has no special or intrinsic meaning or purpose." William Gass, a philosopher, wrote, "There's no meaning to life." This one's the one I kind of chuckled at. Thomas Nagel, who wrote a book called What Does It All Mean, wrote back to Moorhead and said, "I'm afraid the meaning of life still eludes me." And yet he wrote a book saying, "What does it all mean?" Now, what if Moorhead wrote you and asked you, what do you think is the purpose of life? What's the purpose of life? When you ask us non-philosopher, non-inventor, non-leader types what we think the purpose of life is, usually it's something like this: to do the best that I can with the time that I have. It sounds pretty noble. To treat others the way that I like to be treated. To live a life that actually treats others with respect and dignity. Or to work hard and provide for my family, which is a noble responsibility. Or to contribute something to society that lasts beyond myself. We have this sense that life is bigger than me, and so the purpose of life is to contribute something that lasts beyond myself, or to be happy with the time that I have. You know, I think about life all around and all that's going on. I can't make head nor tail of it, but if I'm just happy with the time I have, that's the purpose that I'm here for. Or some to make money so I can buy the things that I want. Now, none of these are intrinsically bad or evil in and of themselves. There's just one thing about them that make them totally unworthy to be your purpose of life. And that is, they are all me-centered. When you ask the purpose of life, all these responses look inward to self, and they say of ourselves, what can I find in and of me that tells me I have meaning? Where do I find my meaning? Well, I gotta look inside myself to find meaning. Now, Rick Warren wrote the second best-selling book in the English language. The first is the Bible. The second was his The Purpose-Driven Life. And this is what Rick Warren says. It's not about you. I mean, just stop. Think about that sentence. Your life, my life, is not about me. The purpose of my life is far greater than my own personal fulfillment, my own peace of mind, or even my own happiness. We're talking now about the purpose of my life. It's far greater than my family, my career, or even my wildest dreams and ambitions. If you want to know why you were placed on this earth, you must begin with who? God. You were born by his purpose and for his purpose. Now, it kind of makes sense that if I want to know the purpose of my life, that I'm not going to look within because I had no say on whether I would be here or what time of the history I would be here or what gifts that I would have or what opportunities I would have or where I was born. I had no say on any of that. I just kind of showed up on this earth without even knowing I was showing up on this earth. I had no part in the reason and the purpose of my existence, the most critical, essential reality of my life, that I exist. I had no say, no part, no action in it. Neither did you. And so, to look inward for my own purpose would be foolish. I have to look at my creator, Psalm 139. David said this, written thousands of years ago, "For you created my inmost being. You created everything about me and even that inner part of me. You knit me together in my mother's womb." That God was fashioning and shaping you as a specific individual while you were being formed in your mother's womb. This is why we believe in the sanctity of life, because there is a supernatural act going on inside a mother's womb where God is shaping an individual whom he has decreed would exist. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. What are you going to have? Oh, I don't know. Might be a boy, might be a girl. Could be the other thing too. I don't know. It's one of them. What's he or she going to be like? What color of eyes? What hair? What will their personality be like? I don't know. We'll have to see. And God says, and David, while he's writing, says, "You knew all of that in the secret place. While I was in the womb of my mother, you were determining all of that. You saw my eyes. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All my days were ordained for me, were written in your book before I was even born. Before I came to be." So God was fashioning and molding and shaping you. Not just that you would be, you know, one of a line of millions and billions of people that would show up on earth. You'd be, you know, created through the natural processes of procreation. David is saying that you knew me as an individual. You formed and shaped me supernaturally in the womb because you have a purpose for me. We were created by God's purpose and for God's purpose. Paul picks the same thing up when we, in Ephesians chapter 2, if I could have Ephesians chapter 2, for it's by grace that you have been saved through faith. It's not of yourselves. It's a gift of God, not of works, that no one can boast. Now, why? Why did God, by his grace, reach out and draw broken and rebellious and sinful people back to himself? Because, or for, we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God has prepared in what? In advance. Can more of you say that? In advance of your even coming to faith. In fact, by Psalm 39, we know in advance before you were even born and while you're being shaped and while I was being shaped, God had prepared in advance works, a purpose for me that I should do. You are not an accident. You just may not know your purpose. And in order to grow, we must first understand why we are here. And to understand that purpose, we must first look to God. Now, let me ask this question, because if you're not asking it yet, if you think about this sermon, you will eventually ask this question. Well, so what? So what? Why would I know my purpose? So who cares if I know my purpose? Well, let's just take an event or an experience that probably most of us have had called a buffet line. If you've been to the Mandarin, you know that's the buffet of all buffets, right? But if you have never been to the Mandarin, I am sure at some time, at a family gathering or a restaurant, you went to a buffet at some time. And you took your plate and you went up to the buffet. And what did you put on your plate? Well, food. Yes, you put food on there. But why did you put the foods on you put on your plate? Normally because they are foods that we like or we feel like at that time. And so we go, we couldn't put everything on our plate, so we pick and choose. And why do we pick and choose the foods that we pick and choose? Because usually they're what we want. It's something we like or something we feel like at that moment, so we put it on our plate and we go back to our table and eat it. But have you ever seen a high-level athlete approach a buffet? Well, probably not, because they wouldn't go to those kinds of things. But if they did, what would they do as they went through the buffet? They pick and choose foods with a totally different mindset. What's their mindset? They pick and choose foods that will adequately fuel their body to accomplish their purpose. So their choices are determined by their purpose. They want to win in whatever a sport that they are involved in. They want to eat the right foods that will enable this body to perform so they can fulfill the purpose that they have set for themselves to win. Their purpose determines what they eat off the buffet. Well, it's like that in life. If you don't know what your purpose is, what do you pick and choose to do with your days? What do you pick and choose on your decisions? Well, whatever you feel like. Whatever we want. Whatever I want, what I feel like at the moment, or I think I feel like, whatever my desire is, that's what I choose. That's what I do. That determines the choices I make through my day. But if you have a clear purpose that you know your life is about, what will you pick and choose? Only those things that advance the purpose that you have. Josh McDowell, at one time, was an apologist for the faith. I haven't heard a lot about him. He's older now, but I haven't heard a lot about him. But he was really engaged in defending the faith and explaining the faith to people who are outside the faith. And he said he had a friend who was a headhunter. So this friend would go around and would recruit executives for high-level companies, so high-level executives. And part of his role that made him so good at it was he would determine and figure out who the person was and did they fit the job and the culture of the job before he would recommend them for that job. And so it was a lot of questions and spending time and asking and trying to get into the head of the executive in order to understand the person to determine whether he wanted to present this person as the answer to this company's search. And one of his favorite things he said he would love to do, he'd take a potential executive out for lunch or he'd go to the person's office and then he'd take off his jacket and start talking and talk about, you know, hockey or football, probably never talked about hockey, talk about football or basketball or whatever and family and intentionally take his coat off, loosen his tie, buy a few drinks, they'd all have a nice time, they'd be relaxing. And when he felt that individual was totally relaxed and engaged in just a personal conversation, he would take his feet off the table or off the chair or lean forward and he would ask, what do you think the purpose of life is? And he said he always caught people. He was never surprised by the answer he'd get. The people would stumble and think through and give kind of, well, I guess it's to, you know, to do the best I can. Leave stuff. And it was always a me-centered purpose. And he would ask that question in order to get into the mind of the individual to see how they looked at life. And he said one time he did the same thing. He got, you know, brought a guy out and he was sitting there talking. One took the jacket off, talked about other things. And right at the right moment, leaned forward and said, what do you think the purpose of life is? A question he'd asked many other executives. And without hesitation, the executive shot back to him and said, to know Jesus and take as many people I can to heaven. He said, I was stunned. The clarity of the purpose he had for his life enabled him to determine what decisions he would make each day. He knew why he was here. And knew what he was looking for, and knew how to live it out. And do we understand the purpose of our lives? I don't think we can adequately live a life that has eternal benefits and that has lasting meaning. Now, did Jesus talk at all about this? Yes, Jesus talked a lot about it, and he'd say it in different ways. And John chapter 6 is, I want to land on this passage, though it's not the only passage that Jesus talks about why we're here and how we're supposed to respond to God, but it's the one that we're going to use today. And in John chapter 6, verse 12, I'm just going to pick a verse out of the middle of this story. It's the story of feeding of 5,000. So Jesus, they come, they're gathered around Jesus, they're out, he's teaching, and they don't have any food. And so his disciples around him said, what are we going to do? And he says, have them sit down. And then there's just a little bit of food left that they get from an individual. And he feeds them, all 5,000. And it says in the text, 5,000 men. So that means their wives and their children were probably with them. So it was far more than 5,000 people Jesus feeds from one lunch. And right in the middle of the story, it says, when they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, gather the pieces that are left over, let nothing be wasted. And so they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. So not only did he feed the 5,000 plus people, but there was food left over. And it was a lesson for them, for the people and for his disciples. Well, the next day, Jesus gets in a boat and they head off. Actually that night he heads across the lake, the Sea of Galilee, and the people wake up and Jesus isn't there, and say that, so they go to find him. And then in verse 25 it said, when they found him on the other side of the lake, these people that followed him said, Rabbi, when did you get here? And Jesus answers, he doesn't answer their question, he says, very truly I tell you, you are looking for me, not because you saw the signs I perform, because you ate loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you, for on him God the Father has placed the seal of approval. So Jesus says to them, look, don't follow and chase after this world looking for things that will just feed your temporary desires. He just didn't have a problem with them eating food. He gave it to them. But he said, I know what you're after. You're just after whatever you want and whatever meets your need and your desire at the moment. But I'm here to tell you. I'm here to show you a greater way. A way of meaning, a way of existence, a way of life. And so the disciples, or the people, ask of Jesus, well, then what must we do the works of God, that the works God requires? In other words, they say to him, well, okay, if we're not supposed to look after food, well, what is it we're supposed to be focusing on? In other words, what's our purpose? What does God require of us? If it's not coming to get food, what are you talking about? What is it that is the purpose that we should be seeking after? And Jesus says to them, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. If you want to know what God requires of you, the purpose that he has outlined for your life, it is to believe in the one he sent. Now stop for a second. You'll fall into one of two categories sitting here around this verse. Either you do believe in Jesus or you don't. I'll talk in a moment to those of you that don't believe in Jesus. Because I want to talk to those of you that believe or say you believe in Jesus. As soon as I read that verse, I'm thinking something went on in your mind, something like this. Oh, good, yeah, I've done that. You know, I was at a camp, and I prayed to receive Jesus, or I was by my bed, and my mom or my dad knelt down with me and helped me pray to receive Jesus, or I was in Sunday school, and the teacher was teaching about Jesus, and I realized I had to believe, and so I prayed with my Sunday school teacher to believe in Jesus. Or a friend, or I was at a seminar, or I was somewhere, and you prayed, there was an event one day in your life, and you prayed to receive Jesus. Now, here's the problem. There's nothing wrong with that. We all have to come to that place where we deal with our sin by giving it to Jesus and believing that his death and resurrection pays for our sin, takes the shame, the things that we would be embarrassed for people to know, the things that make us feel pushed away from other people, our family, the things that we feel the deepest sorrow about. They're the things that we have to bring our sin, our brokenness to Jesus and give to him and believe that his death not only pays for, but heals those things and makes me right with God so I'm free to enter a relationship with God. We all have to make that choice. But here's the problem I have is that too many of us check that off the list and think that just praying that is all that Jesus means when he said what's required of you is to believe in the one he sent. Because when he says believe, he doesn't mean mental assent. He doesn't mean just believe some facts about Jesus. He means you believe, you give and surrender your life to follow Jesus. It's like this. I have lost count of the number of weddings I've done. But in every wedding, there's a point at which I turn to the man and say, do you take whatever her name is, to be your lawfully wedded wife? And he says, I've never had anybody say no. It'd be kind of awkward. I should be prepared for that because, you know, no. I wouldn't know what to say. I guess I would pick him up. When she was done hitting him, I think that's probably, I'd break up the fight. But he always says, yes, I do. And then I turn to her and I say, do you take, to be your lawfully wedded husband? And she always says, I do. Now, those two and everybody in the room knows when they're saying I do, this is not just a decision they're making today that will have no impact on the rest of their lives. They are saying, I do, because they are committing their lives to one another, to a special, intimate relationship between only the two of them until death do us part. And when Jesus says, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent, Belief here doesn't mean a mental assent. Oh yeah, I believe Jesus was who he said he was. It includes that, of course. But it is a decision where you make to commit your life to Jesus Christ, to follow him in relationship the rest of your life. Just like a guy says, I believe she's the one for me, and that belief leads to a decision of total commitment for the rest of his life. Just like when a woman says, I believe he's the one for me, and that decision leads to a commitment of her total self to that man for the rest of their life. So when Jesus is talking about belief, now this, I'm talking to those of you that checked off, I prayed that prayer. If that was not your understanding, or that is not your lifestyle, then you need to question what you actually prayed. Was it what Jesus was talking about? Oh, I don't doubt you prayed the prayer. I don't doubt you were sincere when you prayed it. But if you're not walking in relationship with Jesus, then I don't think you entered into the same kind of relationship Jesus was talking about. The same kind of belief. Any more than a guy who says in his wedding, I do, and then goes out and continues to date other women. I would say, I don't think you understood what you were saying in front of all those people when you said, I do. And so the work of God, the purpose, is for us to enter into belief. Believing that Jesus and his death on the cross reconciles me to God. And I say, I want that life. I want him. And by faith, I give myself to Jesus for the salvation of my soul, for the forgiveness of sins, but so that I might walk, follow, live with, be in relationship, whatever metaphor you want to use, with Jesus every day of my life. That's your purpose. That's your purpose. Is to believe in Jesus. Now let's go back to that Mandarin metaphor. In the buffet of life, if you're a follower of Jesus and your purpose is to walk with Jesus in this life, then the choices you make from the buffet of life will be those that honor and respect and obey Jesus. Just like when you said, I do at an altar, if you're married, because not everybody's married, but if you were married and you said, I do, the choices you make are to honor, respect, and give dignity to the spouse you said, I'm committed to live with. And so with Jesus. If your purpose is to believe in him, to follow him, to walk with Jesus, to be surrendered to him and live your life and honor him, then every choice you make each day, every word that comes out of your mouth, everything your eyes looks at, every desire your heart sets itself upon, every action you take is to be lived in a way that honors and glorifies Jesus. And in return, he promises that he will pour life, the life of God, into you. And he does it through our obedience. As we obey him, we begin to experience the life, the joy, the fullness that he talked about. It comes through the gateway of obedience. So, well, how do I know how to live for Jesus? How do I know what decisions I should make? Because not everything is in the Bible. The Bible doesn't tell me what job to take. It doesn't tell me what house to buy. It doesn't tell me what clothes I should wear. The Bible doesn't even tell me who I should marry. These are big decisions. Well, as we learn to walk in daily communion with God, He speaks to us through His Word, through other people, through the Spirit's prompting in our lives. And the closer we get to Jesus, the more we know the mind and the heart of Jesus. Just like the more you grow in your relationship with your spouse, you can what? Finish their sentences. You know what they're thinking. You know what they're going to say because you've been around them so much that their heart is impressed upon you and you know what they're thinking. And as we walk with Jesus and grow in our relationship with Him, guess what? We begin to know what His heart is and what His mind is thinking and what His Word says and how His Spirit is directing us. These things we learn, but you only learn it as you fulfill the purpose of walking with Him in belief day by day. And that's why we're doing this series. Growing. Because our relationship with Jesus is not something that is static, it's dynamic, it's growing. And as we engage in spiritual practices, our relationship with Him grows. And so this new year, I want us to look at various spiritual practices that help us to grow. And I'm asking you to be thinking about and praying, God, how do you want me to grow? Now, for some of you who don't believe in Jesus, your step of growth would be this. I need to settle my sin issues. I keep going to this church and I keep hearing that I'm separated from God because of my sin, and I need to settle that issue. I've got things in my life, in my past, or things that are happening now that I know dishonor God, and I don't know what to do about them. But the gospel message says that Jesus' death on the cross settles our sin issue, deals with them, pays the punishment for them, but also restores relationship back with God for those that are willing to say, Jesus, I believe your death. I confess my sin, and I surrender my life to you. Maybe that's the growth step for you going forward in this new year, to settle where you are at when it comes to belief in Jesus. Now, for others of you, you say, no, I've made that decision. I laid it all but for Jesus, but you know what? I've been wandering. I wouldn't say that Monday through Saturday, I walk with Jesus. I wouldn't say that's really that important to me. And God's been getting my attention. I just feel this sense of emptiness, and I have this sense of purpose in my life, and the things I thought would bring me happiness are kind of crumbling. And I have all this relational breakdown. And I feel at times, in those quiet times when I'm driving to work or I'm sitting watching TV at night mindlessly and nobody's around, I feel like, man, my life doesn't have really any meaning or purpose to it. For those of you that have wandered away from Jesus, then He's calling you to come back. It's time to come back. And maybe that's where you're at, and you sit here, you come to church, but really, through the week, Jesus would be a stranger. And so maybe that's your growth decision. I need to settle whether I'm going to walk with Jesus or not. I need to get back to some things that will help me to deal with issues in my life and follow Him and live for Him. I need to get back to Him because I've been wandering, and that's your growth decision over these next few weeks. And then there are those of you here that walk with Jesus. I mean, you got a vibrant relationship with Jesus. You walk with Him, you come and worship, and then Monday you're walking with Him, Tuesday you're walking with Him, you're praying about your family, you're praying about your job, you're praying about the issues that you face. You're trying to walk with Jesus. Some of those issues are settled in a week, some take 10 years, but you keep walking with Him and through those issues and dealing with sin in your life. You're going to things like freedom sessions. Now, I can't recommend that highly enough to deal with those issues that cause you the pain. That's what that's about. And you've been through freedom sessions, or you want to go through, and you're walking with Him, and you're saying, I just want to be honest with God. I want to walk with Him. And my encouragement to you is keep it up, but ask, well, how do I go deeper? We've never arrived, any of us. And so how do I go deeper with God? How do I walk with Jesus in a deeper way? So which one of those three are you? I have to settle the sin issue. I've settled it, but I've been wandering. Or I'm walking with Jesus, and I want to go deeper. Over the next few weeks, that's what this series, Growing, will be about. But it all depends on one thing. God will speak, but will you listen? Would you bow your head with me? Every communion, we have our elders and their wives, if they're available, to come and pray for those that would want to come. And so at the end of the service, we'll have our elders up front, and they'll be here for prayer. And if God is speaking to you, or you want to just pray over an issue with God, with somebody else, then feel free to come. If there's issues you need healing for in your life, whether physical or emotional or spiritual, you can pray for those as well. And here's three things to consider. Do you need to settle that sin issue in your life? Do you need to come back because you're wandering, or do you want to grow deeper? They're the kinds of things that we commit to prayer with others. And so if God is prompting you, then feel free to come and pray. But even if you don't want to come and pray, you walk out of here, you still have to answer one of those questions. So I want to pray. Lord Jesus, the work for us is to believe in the one that the Father has sent, and you are that one. To enter into relationship with you, believing that your death on the cross is the basis of our reconciliation with our Father and becomes the foundation that we build relationship on with you. And so as we enter into this new year and we enter into the idea of growing spiritually, I want to ask that you would speak very clearly to us, not just here in services, but when we go to work or we are at home working or we go to school tomorrow and then Tuesday and through the week and then through this month, that your Spirit will be speaking to us about how you want us to grow. Would you make clear to us the steps that you're calling us to make? Would you open our hearts so that we'll turn toward you and be open and willing and submissive and teachable to you? Would you help solve those doubts that we have that just strangle us, the sin that keeps holding us back? Would we step into the light with you? Would we trust you and trust you to bring us through those things that seem so formidable to us? And may our lives, may you teach us to walk with you in belief day by day in obedience and in love for you. And then you reveal to us the things you call us to do and the things you call us away from. That our lives will be filled with the purpose of knowing you and obeying you and therefore fulfilling the purpose you had for us as we walk in obedience. I pray this over this body, these people, so that Jesus will be lifted up, exalted, and honored.